We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You are listening to KC Sports Network, proudly presented by Emprise Bank, your partner in possible. Coming up, the latest on the Kansas Jayhawks from KCSN, which features three shows each week in Border War, hosted by former Jayhawks guard Jeff Hawkins and Mizzou forward Jarrett Sutton. Ain't No Seats with Ryan Reinhart, Anthony Bax, and Braden Turner. And Booth Review, covering Jayhawks football with Kent Swanson and weekly special guests. Make sure to hit that follow button so you don't miss anything. Stay up to date on all things KU with KCSN. And now, the latest on the Kansas Jayhawks.
All right, folks, welcome back. Ain't No Seats podcast. Before we get going, we got to talk about who we always talk about, our title sponsor, Emprise Bank. An Emprise Bank debit card is good anywhere. You have access to 55,000 fee-free ATMs worldwide through the AllPoint ATM network. You can get the same kind of access to your money as any bank across the country while getting the value of working with a trusted partner in Emprise. So as always, shout out Emprise Bank. They've been with us since the beginning, and we appreciate that. So, all right, boys, it's time to talk some Kansas basketball hoops. And I was thinking this today, you know, we had the episode with Rico Bosco last week, and we kind of talked about, okay, what's going on?
I love the KU basketball hoops that we're about to talk. I can't wait for it.
Kansas basketball hoops.
It's just one of those things Braden and I both catch in the moment that Ryan doesn't, and we know where it's going to go. Like, you're going to ask us about it and everything, but no, it's hard because we always look right at each other when something like that happens, and then we just start laughing. We can't control ourselves, really.
Brian Braun. Basketball hoops.
Which we're off on a tangent. Everyone, bring it in. Bring it in. We got to talk Kansas basketball hoops. I will double down.
Yes.
And all right, here's what I was going to say before you pricks started laughing in my face. I can't think of a better way for a team to blow a three-game losing streak, to come off a three-game losing streak, than going to win at Kentucky and then coming back home against Kansas State. And really, you know, you can call that game close. It really wasn't. It was 40 minutes, I would say, of Kansas pretty much not dominating, but very much in control of that game. We go into Kentucky. You can say the same about Kentucky. Control majority of that game, especially the second half. And then, as we just discussed, K-State too. So, coming back, three-game losing streak, getting those two in a row. B-turn, we were on kind of almost panic mode last week with Rico Bosco. Are we back on all-time high? Are we back on big-time expectations just after a week here?
Yeah, I never really wavered on this team just because I know they have the scores. I think they have the personnel to be good defensively. Obviously, getting blown out at Allen had me worried. I didn't even get to watch a second of that game from being at Arrowhead, but I always feel okay with Bill. I think we've all come to that conclusion. I think the older we get, we kind of get less worried about regular season stuff. Obviously, once the 14th straight ended, I think we all kind of backed off on the Big 12 title stuff, which we still want to win the Big 12, especially with how good the league is. But yeah, we last night, that atmosphere was crazy at Allen. It felt like one of those games where everyone in the crowd knew we needed to win, and we obviously had to get payback on K-State. So atmosphere was great. And yeah, I feel great about this team. Jalen's getting, he was so good in the first half last night, but averaging 20 plus, and he's just been carrying this team. He carried them in Lexington too. So I feel good by any Bill Self coach team, and I'm nervous about what you're smiling, laughing at.
Honestly, I'm just sitting here getting the giggles thinking about that I said Kansas basketball hoops. That's a hilarious. It's a hilarious phrase, but we are off the road.
Let's put out a shirt.
The Kansas basketball hoops. But, yeah, I mean, it's wild how quickly college basketball can shift. You know, like in KU basketball especially, Kentucky fan base, Duke fan base, North Carolina, the highs and lows of cheering for programs like that where you, three losses is just unheard of. You don't experience that. So when it happens, takes fly. And I felt like for the most, you know, part, the KU fan base handled it as well as we could have. We've certainly handled three-game losing streaks a lot worse and even two-game losing streaks a lot worse than we did. But that's kind of why it feels so good to not get back on the right path by beating, I don't know, two shitty teams, right? We got back mm-hmm. on by beating two kind of rivals, probably our biggest non-con rival, and then K-State, yeah, who's obviously one of our bigger rivals. So I'm feeling good. I guess let's start with Kentucky. Going into that game, I think I texted, I can't remember if this is AB or whoever it was, but the whole day I was like, God, man, we're going to lose four straight. We're not going to win. And slowly it just, I don't know if it's a will you picture it type deal, AB, you know, that game we always play. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't picture Bill Self losing four straight games. I just couldn't see it happening. And I'm not very impressed with Kentucky. I was not very impressed with them in that game, but I was shocked at how well we rebounded against Shibwe and that whole thing. So I guess it's been a while, or it feels like a while. B-turn, how did you feel about the Kentucky performance? Is that an indication of us being pretty dang good, or is Kentucky, do they just kind of stink? I can't quite figure Kentucky out.
Yeah, I'm not huge on Kentucky's guard play. Obviously they have Shibwe, which I kind of was with you to where I thought would be tough to win in Lexington. They had beat Tennessee recently in Knoxville and they were playing better basketball, so I didn't feel great. And then kind of before the game I came to that same conclusion where I couldn't see Bill Self losing four straight, and I knew Kentucky's guard play wasn't amazing. I thought Bill would come up with a great game plan to slow him down. Oscar still put up numbers, that's what he does. But yeah, I think that just shows you how great Bill is, because KU was super tough and resilient in that game in Lexington. They never folded. They answered every punch, it felt like. And Bill, you know, he was on their ass in practice defensively. And just from a toughness standpoint, I think TCU kind of punked them. And then Baylor, they took the lead in the second half, but game, they kind of pulled away late. So I guess I was going to say with the losing streak too, it's not like you go to K-State and you lose three guys in overtime. You lose three starters. Yeah. A really good team, good atmosphere, and then you lose to a Baylor team who's hot and streaking right now. So, like you said, it's not like they're playing bad teams. They're still playing good teams. But, yeah, at Kentucky, resilient. I thought it was a tough performance, and Jalen just hits – like, I just sit there and laugh watching Jalen. He hits that corner three at one point where Kentucky's going on a run. He hits every big shot imaginable, and you just feel good when he pulls from anywhere. Even last night, he's 4-for-9 from three, and every miss just feels like it's in and out or – right on.
We've officially reached the, like, I feel like we've been waiting for Jalen to become this type of shooter for like 3 years now. Like that was the thing with him out of high school. I felt like he's a shooter. That was what I remember him as, watching highlight tapes. I was like, oh, I can't wait for this guy to come in and just be a knockdown shooter. And I was so wrong, because that's not the style of play he is. But he was definitely known for being an elite shooter, and he just hasn't figured it out, but it felt like it was coming. And he's been, like you said, lights out, like 4-of-9 last night, but really timely ones. He seems to hit them when momentum's like, it's almost like he hits them more when we're kind of grooving and the game's going our way. He had Allen Fieldhouse going bananas last night. So Jalen's hitting a stride that we all hoped to see, and I just hope he can keep it at this level. Now, the thing we talked about during the losing streak was DeJuan was probably playing the worst ball of his career. And Kevin McCuller, I just want to say this. He's hilarious, because you can sit and watch a game and want to break things because Kevin McCuller launches a shot. He bricks it. Kevin McCuller maybe turns the ball. I don't know. He does a lot of frustrating things. Then you sit down and you read the score or the box score, and he's got like 16-13. Like last night, he was 16 and 13. He was 2 of 10 from the field. Like he cracks me up because he puts up numbers and he plays so hard and he's so good defensively and he's hard. I don't know. AB, how would you describe Kevin McCullough? Is it easier to say he's hard to like love or is he hard to hate? Like I can't figure out how to explain Kevin McCullough, but he cracks me up because he can be so frustrating but also be playing so good at the same time.
It's kind of tough because I don't like when I think of guys like Marcus Garrett or DeJuan to an extent, like that's what I'm watching them do. That's what I expect out of them is to play good defense and lock down. McCullough does that, but that's not what I thought he was coming in. Like I thought he was like, especially the way the year started, I thought he was going to be a legit second or third option all year long. And I think a lot of people have that same mindset too. And it's like a thing where he could be playing a perfect game defensively, but our fans and myself included are going to get very annoyed with him on offense when he's airballing a three off the backside of the backboard or taking this insane layup with four dudes around him when Grady and Jalen are both wide open in the corner in the wing. But he's the kind of guy that Bill just doesn't seem like he's going to take out ever. So we kind of just have to get used to it and hope that he gets hot at the right time offensively and doesn't, or at least not do things that are going to kill you. Like there were games in the losing streak where it was like, what are you doing, dude? Like, just calm down a little bit.
Like, and it compounds with him. Like, one mistake, I feel like, sometimes turns into two. But the thing about McCullough that's almost a blessing and a curse is he's a classic next play guy. Like, he doesn't let the play before get in his head, and that's helped him. He's made a ton of huge plays this year. But, my God, when he clanks one off the side of the backboard and then comes down the next possession and launches another one, you're like, what? Did he forget what just happened? But like I said, the guy plays so hard. He played great the last two games. So
does anyone in the history of basketball hoops like shooting 17, 18 footers more than Kevin McCullough?
No.
DeMar DeRozan.
That's kind of what I said, I think, a week or so ago, though, is how good our wings and guards have been rebounding it. Kevin McCullough, 16 and 13 last night. And then he had 11 and 12 on Saturday at Kentucky, but he's 6 of 20 combined in those two games. So 30%. He's obviously really good defensively and can rebound. I think that's all we've – I feel like Rye, I know – I feel like you had this stance before the season that McCullough's just never really been a scorer. He's never been this electric shooter. So all we really wanted from him is to guard and be active, hustle plays, get rebounds. So as long as he's doing that, I'm happy because I rely on Jay Will. Which, God, I was thinking that last night. It feels like that's the only scorer right now that we can actually rely on. Grady Dick obviously can shoot it. We've seen him light it up. But there's one guy we really can count on every single night. And it's kind of scary, but they're still one of the best teams in the country.
It feels like, which I think we all know this team can't go deep without Grady Dick becoming that guy, which it's, I guess, kind of a good sign that we won our last two with Grady pretty much not doing much. But I feel like every good KU freshman's had this stretch. I remember Xavier Henry had a stretch in conference play where he stunk and he was fine. You know, he was solid in late in that year. And so I don't know. I am a little worried. I don't know if Grady is struggling because just a little slump, maybe getting a little tired, or have teams kind of dialed in more on him that's affecting, but that is for sure terrifying thought to think if Jalen Wilson has an off game in a second round game against that's an 8 seed or a 10 seed, like who is going to save us when we're down 54-50 with 6 minutes to play to a 10 seed and everyone's getting tight and Jalen Wilson can't buy a bucket, or maybe they just have him well defended. Like it's gotta be Grady. And unfortunately Grady just hasn't stepped into that role as well as I think we would have hoped for, but still a lot of time left on the season. And DeJuan Harris can get 18 a game like he did last night. He won't, but if he can come anywhere close to that, that'll help.
Didn't he just score like 5 points in three games?
Yeah.
Four games. At least two for 18. In a four-game stretch with 5 points,
hey, is it just always finds us level?
Is it just me, or does Grady kind of stink around the rim?
I don't know. I guess I've been more I'm not concerned about his shooting at all, but like I'm shocked every time he misses, and he's missed a lot from behind the arc here lately. Like he's going to have a game soon where he goes like six of 8 from 3 and just goes bonkers. Like, he has to. But
AB, we talked about this before the pod, about how K-State really – KU was in control the whole night. Like, there was never really a doubt that K-State was going to come back. But it felt like there was a little stretch there in the second half where K-State was getting a lot of transition layups. They were missing a lot of layups. Their big man airballed a one-footer. Which was outrageous, but
no backboard, nothing.
It felt like they were going on a little stretch to where they could make it a little interesting. And KU had a timeout. We come out, DeJuan hits a three from the corner, and Bill talked about it after the game. It was such a big shot, but DeJuan went from having kind of a tough night, especially around the rim. He was aggressive, which was crazy. I think he shot 6 threes, but
yeah,
he had 5 points, and I was sitting there thinking he was struggling. Then you look up, he has 18. So DeJuan was really damn good down the stretch.
I was stunned when I saw he had 18. It was quiet. But yeah, I mean, DeJuan, I thought you were going to finish the thought.
I don't even know.
DeJuan, yeah, I mean, we all knew DeJuan was struggling, and we knew he wasn't going to keep playing like that. But last night, obviously, we're not getting 18 a game from DeJuan. We're not even going to get 10, 11, 12 a game from DeJuan. But Bill has been saying it all year. If DeJuan can go out and just actually look to score, that helps us so in so many ways without him even having to put up a bunch of shots. If the defense has to think about DeJuan trying to score, that's going to help Grady Dick. That's going to help Jalen Wilson. That's going to help KJ Adams, who, AB, you're the biggest KJ Adams guys out there.
Mm-hmm.
Did any of us have a little bit of a fear that during the 3-game losing streak that maybe KJ's early season success was like fluky? I don't want to say fluky, but like it almost seemed a little too good to be true. But I think he's proven since then, after he had kind of a rough patch, that he's pretty for real. Like, I'm still blown away at how good KJ Adams is.
It is wild thinking about last year. We were laughing that he was on the court on the final play of the season. Like, in the video, Allen's like, why is KJ in? It's just funny to me to think back at, like, that. And he was right. Like, but that KJ Adams is the guy that's, like, been consistently a top 2 or 3 player. All year. And even I said he would start. I had no expectation that he was going to play as well as he has this year. But to answer your question, maybe a little bit. I don't like to admit that because I love him so much. But, like, come on. I mean, we were all thinking
that. It was
crazy
what he was doing.
Yeah, because he wasn't even just playing good. He was
it's like he couldn't sustain it, I feel like.
Right.
Which is fine. We don't need him to sustain that level. But the fact, like, even last night, I think, what did he have, B-turn? Like,
8-3.
Yeah, I mean, we need him to get more than 3 boards. But
I thought about the whole time in the second half in Lexington, I was just thinking, like, when KJ Adams is going and he's this good, like, we are so damn good. And obviously it makes sense because he's our third, fourth, or maybe he's probably the fourth option, I would say, behind McColl or J. Will Grady. So it makes sense when he has a good night, we're obviously going to play well. But, dude, some of the dunks last night he had got the building going, like,
spin.
Spin move. Yeah. I think he had a nice little dish off from DeJuan and dunked on someone. But yeah, when he's going and he's playing with energy, and I love the emotion he plays with. But yeah, KJ, he's had some big night. I mean, we talked about it. He had how many straight and double figures? 10 straight or something?
It was crazy. Bet on him I bet on him under 10.5, and he scored like 23 points that night.
Yeah, he had 10 by the first Iowa TV State. Timeout, I think.
We're certainly not in a spot where it's like we don't need KJ to be elite, but we do need KJ to be good because, I don't know. This is a decent transition. How about our boy Ernest Uday? Went from absolutely buried on the bench. And last night he was a little bit of like classic freshman big man that just, he's playing so hard. He was playing so hard. He was trying so hard, but just kind of flailing around, right? Legs are flying. Arms are flying. There's not much, you know, reason for what he's doing, but he was making – he was getting the ball, getting his hand on the ball, getting rebounds, had a tip-in earlier, offensive rebound early. So I'm not ready to be like, oh, Ernest Uday can be a true – I don't even know what to say, like a true impact player off the bench, but – can Ernest Uday get minutes in March for this team? Or is it – I mean, Clements put good minutes. I don't know. It's interesting.
Clements played more than he did.
I feel like I feel like we're back to where we were in like November, where we're still trying to figure out who the best backup big is, but it's been promising the last few weeks, I think.
Yeah. And it, I don't know about you guys, but it looks to me that the game's slowing down a little bit more for Ernest. I know he's not playing a ton of minutes, but he looks a lot more comfortable. Last night he played 10 minutes. He had 6 rebounds in 10 minutes, which is elite. Yeah, Clements hit a three, had the tongue out, but Ernest played a good amount of minutes in Lexington, and it kind of makes you wonder. Obviously, Zuby got hurt, but I guess a performance like that from Uday and Clements, does that just kind of bury Zuby for the rest of the year, even though he didn't do anything to deserve that? It's just two guys might have stepped up last night, and he could just be the odd man out for the rest of the year.
Yeah, it's tough, and I don't know. Who do you guys lean towards? If I had to say, okay, we get one big that's going to play 10 minutes a game in March or even late February in a big conference game, do you want it to be Clements or do you want it to be Uday? Because I go back, I kind of like the experience.
How much experience do you have? I mean, he's not like he's a fifth year. It's not like Mitch Lightfoot last year.
February, Clements would have been practicing for 2 years. I don't know.
I get where you're coming from, but like, I don't know. Maybe I'm just being biased against Clements. Like, I still think he can be something, but he just, I'm just imagining a game late in February or semis of the Big 12 tournament, and Clements is trying to like D up in the post, and he's just like, nothing against him. He's just small. Like, I don't, he can hold his own for a little bit, but I don't want to see him playing 15, 20 minutes if KJ gets in foul trouble, even though it worked last night. Last night's game is just weird. We'll get more into that later. But
yeah,
I want a bigger body in there. Just on the concept of basketball, like that's kind of how I view it. I like having a true big at times. And to me, Clements is more better like a swing four, like what Jalen plays.
That's probably the only argument you can make over Ernest is that he can stretch the floor from a physicality standpoint, athleticism standpoint. You obviously want Ernest, and he's a five-star big time recruit. So it felt like one of those guys that we needed to be solid this year because we knew we didn't really have a big off the bench, but I feel like if Ernie or Clements started playing well, I don't know. I love calling him Ernie Uday.
Ernest is such an elite name. It's so.
But if one of those two, and then I feel really solid about Joe and Bobby right now. I think those two are playing really well. They're playing smart basketball. Bobby was pretty electric last night, getting to the rim. He got banged up there for a little bit. I think he hurt his hammy or something for a second, but Joe comes in, randomly hits shots, or he'll randomly just brick him. It's either a doink or
I love him.
A swish.
I love Joe.
Talk about confidence like we were talking about with McCuller. Joe's got that same dog in him. He'll keep going.
He's going down swinging for
sure. I think that rotation of 7 or 8 right there, I feel pretty solid about right now because, I mean, you can't trust Ernest or Clements right now a ton at all. I'm not saying that, but I think if Ernest comes in and does what he did last night, 10 minutes, 1 for 1 from the floor, make the free throw, get 6 rebounds in 10 minutes, you'll take that every night.
Yeah, and I just remembered the lobs that Ernest caught against Kentucky, and I've changed my mind. I'm Ernest over Clements. I've quickly been convinced. But
what about the experience?
Yeah, let's take a quick break. Lobs over experience all day. Take a quick break. We'll be back. We got to talk, make jokes about K-State. We got to get to what we do best, boys. Let's go.
You're listening to the fastest growing sports media network in Kansas City, KC Sports Network. We'll be back right after this.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Entertain, educate, inform. KC Sports Network.
All right, we are back. So we recap. I mean, KU, K-State, AB, I think you said it best. I don't even remember if you said it while we were recording, but
nope.
The game just wasn't very fun. Like, the first half was fun, but the flow of the game in the second half, you couldn't get anything going. It's whistle after whistle after whistle, which led to free throw after free throw. It was not fun. Like, I got home last night and was like, I don't remember a thing about the second half. Couldn't tell you fun plays. Couldn't tell you – I mean, the DeJuan three was kind of the moment that sticks out to me late in that game. But – so the game kind of sucked. But the thing about KU-K State rivalry that makes it so funny and just a good rivalry, it's not the stuff on the court. It's always off-the-court stuff. And it's whether that's a ref – meltdown with the speed travel where people lose their minds or
he didn't
or
travel.
A band, you know, whatever that whole issue was with the K-State band or Bill Self saying Brandon Green had a dick move. Like, the rivalry is stupid. It's silly. There's always funny things. That. And to me, we got to talk about, because we've talked about Jerome Tang, and it's really hard to slander Jerome Tang. The guy seems like a great individual, great person. But last night, he said something that was a little crazy, a little Bruce Weber-ish. He said, hey, you know, prior to 1988, and I don't know this exact quote, but I, you know, this was in some way said. He said, prior to 1988, K-State had more conference titles and more Final Fours than the University of Kansas, which that would be a decent quote if it was true at all. It's
simply not
incorrect. It's just
simply not, Jim.
You can't say stuff like that, I feel like, when you don't know for sure. Like, you got to at least do your research.
He wasn't close. Do you have Adam Sullivan's tweet pulled up?
I can pull it real quick, but I mean,
it was something along the lines of, like, before 1988, it was, I think, 38-17 KU in conference titles. And I can't remember the Final Four numbers, but KU had a pretty significant lead.
Yeah, where'd you send that?
I thought I sent it too, and I just tried to find it, and I can't anywhere. Oh, it was.
Oh, here it is.
It was in our group text. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, it says Tang and Presser prior, or here's what he said: prior to 1988, K-State had more Final Fours and conference title than KU. Here's the actual numbers: prior to 1988, Final Fours, KU 7, KSU 4. So we've almost doubled them up. conference titles, KU 38. K-State 17. So we have doubled them up in conference titles. So that's what's so funny about this quote, is it's not like he was off by a number.
I wonder who told him that.
It's so funny. And
it's insane.
I think a KU fan probably got his number and trolled him or something.
That's what the ref told him when he got his T, is that they were pretty even and pretty equal in 88. My thing is, like, think about this. Think about it this way. The difference in conference titles. Imagine, Ryan, you have a kid and it's born in October of this year. Okay. Their first year of watching basketball is the 2023-2024 Kansas Jayhawks. K-State would have to win every conference title in a row until your son or daughter could legally drink at a bar to catch up to KU before 1988. That's how distant. That's how distant this is. This isn't close. It's, I know 38 and 17 doesn't seem crazy, and Mahomes would come back from that in 1 second. Andrew Luck did come back from that in 1 second. But my point is, we just have to, like, go off on him about this because, like you said, he's a good guy. He's not going to give us a whole lot of ammo to go with. And when he does, we have to attack because that's just what this rivalry is, and that's kind of the personalities that we've built. But I just wanted to get that point out because it's wild that a legal drinking adult is the same age as the gap between conference titles.
I love that hypothetical that we had to, like, create me having a child. Like, shout out to my future child.
I was so ready to see where you were going with that.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing, too. 1988 was 35 years ago. So congrats for almost being as good as KU 60 years ago, Jerome. That's great. Because whenever KU fans bring up history, it's the end of the world. It is literally the end of the world because, who cares about what happened in 1958?
Imagine if Leipold, after our loss, was like, hey, well, you know what? We lead the all-time series in football.
Yeah, before that. Bill Snyder came in, we dominated this team.
Before the last 30 years, we were better. Like, hang the...
I
don't
can't
know.
Imagine just, him saying that. I really can't.
No, and we would be mad at it. And I don't know why, and I'm sure we're missing context. I don't know why Tang went that route. And this must be like a talking point with K-State fans, because I have had a buddy that, not in like a controversial way, he almost says it in kind of a frustrating way. It's like, yeah, it just really sucks. In 1988, that's where you split off, where KU becomes just powerhouse elite and K-State becomes K-State. And he's brought this point to me too. Like, 1988, they were pretty similar programs. And you guys won in 88 in the Elite Eight, took off. We lost, and everything's never the same. But, like, it's just a weird – again, these numbers indicate they really weren't that close programs. Mm-hmm. Like, KU was still a lot better at that point. So, I don't know. It's hard to slander Tang, but anytime we can – we got to jump at it. So
I'm not an all-time series guy at this point in my life, but just to reference it really quick, it was like 204 to 91. Like, that's just something that's never been close ever. Maybe a couple stretches, you know, here and there where K-State gets 3 out of 4, sure. But, like, let's be serious here. Like, that didn't just happen in the last 20 years. It helped, but.
I want to go back to the second half, though, where Ryan talked about the fouls, how there was no flow. I think both teams were in the bonus with 13, 14 minutes left. So, yeah, the second half was not fun to watch at all. Like you said, I don't remember much of it besides a foul fest, and that's what happened in Manhattan, too. So, I think I didn't see Ryan back to Allen Fieldhouse. The service in there was terrific.
I couldn't send a text.
So didn't see many tweets during the game. AB, I'm sure you did. I'm not sure what people said about the refs from both fan bases, but I'm assuming K-State fans weren't too happy about the refs, especially early on.
To be honest with you, Braden, I wish I could have gotten more invested in it, but I didn't have the energy in me after this past weekend on Sunday with, you know, Chiefs Bengals. Like, I was just drained emotionally from rivalry stuff. So I kind of tried to stay off Twitter other than what I was tweeting personally. Like during the game, like, it seems like stuff has come out after that. They're very upset about the refs and history of basketball and Travis Kelce. So that seems like, they're probably pretty bent out of shape about things.
That's a funny conversation as well. On the refs topic, before we get to Travis Kelce, I will say this, like, a lot of guys that, you know, the main characters from K-State Twitter, as I would call it, not going to say names, they really didn't talk a ton about refs, right? Like, not anywhere close to where they normally are. They brought it up a little bit. They always hint at it. Like, that's but I think they also were fair in pointing out that K-State had a lot of bad turnovers, and K-State had a lot of just really K-State didn't play very well. But it does blow my mind how somehow in a game that was so obviously poorly officiated on both sides that a storyline can still come down to. I mean, like we said, we led by double digits the entire second half, and somehow referees become an excuse by a lot of them. And like I said, a lot of the guys I follow, they were more fair than they normally are in that topic. My favorite tweet was a guy that said, fouls were even, free throws were even, or I think did they shoot more free throws than us? I can't even remember.
It was 36-35 K-State.
Yeah. Well, he said, but momentum shifting calls were way in KU's favor. which is a hilarious, just made up stat. That's like, okay, everything was even, but I've created this new stat, momentum shifting calls.
What was the, what were the numbers there? We had three, they had zero.
Yeah. Is there like a stat cast for that on ESPN Plus? Yeah. Momentum shifting.
I mean, there
were
some bad calls. Obviously, we're saying the refs were bad, but it was not because they were favoring one side. They were just, they lost control of the game. But if we're talking calls that went against KU, just one that I thought was hilarious was Noel missed a layup. We started our fast break and the ref blew the whistle, called a foul. Like a classic, he missed. I'm going to call
so
the foul
late.
Now. Yeah, so.
How about the foul on Clements where Jalen finished with a little finger roll and they called like a, like Clements just turned around and it was like a seal almost.
Yeah,
Jay Will was already like 5 feet by him, but yeah, I don't. K-State just kind of, they missed a ton of layups last night, and they really, like we said, they never really had a chance. We scored 49 points in the first half, 50% from threes. Zach Clements is nailing threes. Jalen's nailing threes.
Yeah,
everyone was. I think McCuller hit one early, so they just never really had a chance. And I thought, I don't know how you guys felt, but I thought we could have been up 15-20 at half.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, K-State had some crazy shots too, if I'm remembering right.
Dude, Noel
deep threes fall. Yeah, he was sick.
Yeah,
your boy Desi Sills, AB.
Like I told
you, not quite the same.
Like
guy
I said,
we saw Manhattan.
Can I read a text from a K-State fan?
Yes, please.
Like a very reasonable, level-headed K-State fan. Last night during the game, he said, "Our fans tonight are very annoying. I mean, they go into the game with the mindset that we're going to get screwed over, and after one call, everyone loses their mind." And that goes back to a point we've brought up on this show many times. Teams like K-State and Baylor with Scott Drew a lot of the time, and
West Virginia,
Iowa State, West Va with Hugs, like they come into the game expecting the refs to be so bad that they're hyper-focused on that and that alone. They lost the game 20 minutes before it tipped off. They lost the game before their flight got into town because they're so focused on what the three referees are going to call all night and what they're not going to call all night that they can't focus and play the damn game like it's play. Like at this point, and I'm looking at everyone, including KU fans, college refs are just bad. Referees in general are just bad at their, like, and it's a hard job. I don't want to like act like they're horrible people because they're not. But like, we just all have to go into like sporting events. And I know it's frustrating because you can see slow-mo replays and get super pissed and watch them for years, like I've done with Chris Jones on Tom Brady. But like, they're just going to be 10 to 15 missed calls every game, whether it's at Allen Fieldhouse or Oaken Fieldhouse in Shawnee. Like, it's just going to happen.
I've always said this about West Virginia. They have blown leads in Allen Fieldhouse because they'll be up like eight and one call will go against them. And Huggins loses his mind.
Yeah,
and you can see that team. You hear the crowd and they're like, uh-oh, now the calls are going to go against us. The crowd's in the game. And K-State's been that way too for like what feels like a decade where it's like, yeah, that first call that goes against them in the first half sets them off. Now, it did start like what, 7-2? And I thought Tang – I thought that was a really good, smart technical to get because we were getting the calls and it quickly evened up. But that's how most of the time it goes. Bill Self would have got a technical in that same spot. So I don't know. It just, we're talking about it, so maybe we're hypocrites, but I am just so tired of this rivalry being so just revolving around referees. Like that's what it's felt like it's been, especially the game in Allen Fieldhouse for so long. I wanted to throw this one to you guys. It's been since what, 05 since we lost in Allen Fieldhouse to 06. K-State? 06, my bad. Yeah. Will Bill Self ever lose another home game to K-State?
No.
You say no? Like, well, because I was sitting there at the game thinking, like, we're due to lose one, especially if Tang gets it going. And it's going to suck. Like that first loss to K-State that we haven't experienced as adults, we experienced as a kid, but it was like an ultra young KU team. I don't know. It was a weird loss. Like that's something I really can't even picture happening. And Bill's probably got, let's say, 10 years left.
I mean, you just got to think about it. They go years without losing at Allen. And this is probably the game they take maybe – the most personal. I know there's been better teams, obviously, but I think they take this game so personally. Bill obviously never wants to lose with them. They never lose, period, at Allen. So it just almost feels impossible. But I guess Tang could stay for a while, and he already has them as a top 10 team. So, But how much longer does Bill have also? Does he go five more years? I could obviously he could win five in a row to end it.
Should we do another 30-minute hypothetical on future Kansas coaches? I love that game. Just kidding. We won't do that to you guys again.
Tony Bennett.
Yeah. As we covered,
Ryan
bounce
agrees.
Back. What?
Braden said Tony Bennett, and you said yeah to move on to the next subject, but I'm taking it as yeah. You want Tony Bennett to coach the Hawks?
No. What I want to talk about is.
You want to talk about after break? Now.
I guess, yeah, let's do one last break, and then I want to talk Big 12 hoops.
You're listening to the fastest-growing sports media network in Kansas City, KC Sports Network. We'll be back right after this.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Entertain, educate, inform. KC Sports Network.
All right, so we obviously bounce back. We win at Kentucky. We beat K-State. Everything feels like it's right, you know, going how we want this to go. In the grand scheme of things, this team has four losses, one of which was to number two Tennessee, one of which was on the road to a top 10 team on the road at Baylor, and then you have the bad one, TCU, which is still a really good team. So all in all, this team is still in a great spot, in position to get a one seed. To me, I feel like this next – 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 game stretch could kind of determine, which I guess there's not many games left, so obviously a 5-game stretch has a big impact. But I have a feeling, boys, that we're going to go in and win the Ames. I feel really good about it. I think Texas Tech maybe broke them. You can't blow a 23-point lead to Texas Tech. That's crazy. I have a good feeling about us going in to win at Ames. Then we get Texas at home, which Texas is a tough matchup for us. We've lost them at Allen Fieldhouse, 2 years ago? Took them to, they took us to OT last
year.
Are
they at the top of the Big 12 right now? Alone?
Yep, solo.
I mean, so to me, but I feel good about us going 2-0 over our next two. If we go 2-0 over our next two, then we go to Oklahoma, who just shit-pumped Alabama at OU, so you never know. Then you go to Oklahoma State, always a tough game, but still, games we should win. And then we get Baylor at home, and we're not losing at home to Baylor. So, like, to me, I think this team has a really good shot at going 4-1 in that stretch, potentially 5-0, 3-2 I'm pretty disappointed in. But, like, I don't know. I feel like – so that takes us to February 18th. Do you think there's a chance that following February 18th we're, like, firmly back in number one seed category and, like, the clear favorites to win the conference? Or do you think we are just about to be in a slugfest where we go 3-2 over our next five and now we're tied at the top with 5 losses with somebody? Like, I want us to go get hot and kind of become the favorites in the conference again.
Yeah, and I've talked myself into winning in Ames also this Saturday. I think they're a little banged up. They don't really scare me from a scoring standpoint. I don't think they don't have too many scores. Kalsher can score it. Grill can get hot and shoot it using Anthony Bax's 11 a.m. theory. Maybe their fans are going to be out Friday night getting shit pumped at the bars. First half under. But maybe their fans won't be as electric. I don't know. They obviously always bring it. That's a tough atmosphere. Always one of the toughest places to play, but I've talked myself into winning that. I, on the other hand, Monday night, I think is going to be very tough. And I think it's going to be a very tough matchup for us, but obviously we can win. We can win any game. And Allen, I just think that I'm almost more nervous for that game.
Yeah. I was going to ask, do you like our chances at Iowa State? I will always take Allen Fieldhouse. But Texas, they're so freaking athletic. And I don't know. I'm just not as scared of Texas without Chris Beard, which doesn't. They've been fine without him. The big one is, though, is Texas going into Bramlage? I mean, it feels like, I will say this, it feels like Texas is winning either at K-State or at KU. They're winning one of those games.
It's going to be at K-State.
AB, do you want to share your take? Have you said this publicly on the pod?
I don't know, but I'm happy to share it, Ryan, because right now it's holding form. Let me get to their ping-pong page really quick. It really is. God damn it. I keep missing in between. I hit Baylor and KU, and K-State's right in the middle. I did it like four times in a row. All right, so I think it was – I can't remember what. After they beat Tech, I guess, at some point, I said K-State wouldn't win another conference game until March. I was halfway kidding. I tried to get 50-1 odds from James. He wouldn't respond.
It's crazy he didn't take that bet.
I know. It's like a free $10, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe, maybe not.
What? So just to reiterate, folks, AB has a take from a week ago that said K-State would not win another conference game until March. They're 0-2 since he said it. And yeah, read what they have coming up.
So they just had Iowa State and KU. This is conference, so their Florida win. Good job. Awesome. Probably emotional for Keontae. I don't care. Lost Iowa State, lost to KU. Not that I don't care about Keontae. I don't care about that game. They get Texas at home. Texas already beat them in a close, back-and-forth, high-scoring game. Then they get TCU at home. Maybe they're looking for revenge, but if TCU just plays like they do sometimes, no one beats them. So that's two. Then they got to go to Tech, which is just a tough place to play, even though their record stinks.
I think Tech going to get their mojo back a little bit.
Yeah, Tech isn't the kind of team at this point, the last 5 or 6 years. They're not the kind of program to go 3-13 or 3-15 or whatever it would be in the Big 12. Like, they're going to get some wins. Then they go to OU, which smoked Bama. Okay. Then they get Iowa State at home, Baylor at home, and at Oklahoma State. So they get all the good teams at home, all the home games. I know I sound like Mike Francesa going through the whatever, but like, it's all their home games are against like top 15 ranked teams, and all their road games are against bubble teams or programs that have had success in the last handful of years and are just better than their record.
That is interesting.
I can just picture AB on his couch, K-State playing their last conference game of February, and he's just all in.
You know who it's against, boys? Mike Boynton. Mike Boynton. If Mike Boynton closes this one out for me, you guys haven't seen that side of me yet. I love the man, and if he does that for me, boy, oh boy. Yeah, I guess.
I'll be honest. As you were reading that schedule, I thought it was going to sound a lot harder than that. K-State's going to win one of those basketball games, maybe three of them.
You should have taken the 50-1.
I should have, because I mean, but you're right. I like your theory. Their home games are really hard because they're against really good teams. In the road game, all road games in conference play are tough. I don't know. I've tried to be as negative as possible about K-State. I've tried to pretend they're a fluke. I've tried to pretend they will go through a really rough stretch, which maybe they do. They may lose three straight or three of four with this Texas game Saturday. But I did see DraftKings has them at +900 to win the conference, which
don't touch it.
I'm not touching it. That's my point. I think DraftKings and odds makers would say they're kind of in the same boat as you, where they think K-State's probably going to maybe get torched over the next few weeks. But
can I tell you guys something on here? I'm trying to figure it. K-State is 25th in KenPom, which ranks 6th in the Big 12. Or no, 7th in the Big 12. Yeah. Only teams lower than them are Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, and Texas Tech. The only teams lower than them. So KenPom views them as a team that will be playing on Wednesday night at T-Mobile Center in the 7-10 game against Texas Tech. I'm not saying K-State's bad. I think he's underrating them a little bit, and they win in different ways that it's just like eye test shows me more than analytics. But, like, I also don't think that they're top five good like they were ranked last week, and that they're going to steamroll and go 14-4 in this conference, get a one seed in Kansas City, and then get a one seed in the NCAA tournament, which would go along with that record. That's kind of my point. I don't want to sound like a hater. I still think they're dangerous in March as a 4 or 5 seed, but I just don't know if they're like a true national title top five kind of team like they were rated as.
Yeah. They're definitely
I hate
not.
That we're talking about K-State like this.
I know. I was just about to end this.
They got two elite scorers. I think Noel and Keontae Johnson is so good, dude. He was willing them last night. really. I mean, mm-hmm. anytime they needed a must make bucket, I don't know what that was because we were up double digits, but he would just power his way down low on anyone, whoever, get a bucket, get to the line.
Yeah, dude. I tweeted out the shit pump alert, and he went and had hit a three and then I think forced a turnover and then and one on the other end. He had 6 points in about 10 seconds.
And then I think Tomlin could be really good. He was nailing threes. I was talking to KJ earlier. He's been playing basketball for like 3 years, since he was a junior in high school. So he could be really good. And Tang they play very smart. I know they made a couple mistakes around the rim last night, but they're like a good free throw shooting team. They don't really hurt themselves much. So I'm pretty impressed by Tang, even though
he, we overanalyzed AB's take. It's still a very funny take that they might not win. I mean, if you hit that, that's the funniest prediction you've ever made. But
something to follow.
To get serious, though, are we still on board with 5 losses winning the conference? Is it getting to 6? Is it like, does 5 get us a tie? Because it feels crazy to think this team only loses 2 more games. I will say that. Like, that is hard to think about when you look at this conference.
Because think about it. Texas is at the top by themselves, 7-2. At the end of Monday night, they could easily be 7-4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They play both Kansas schools Saturday, Monday. So they could be or KU could lose Saturday and they're 6-4. I think 12-6 could share it for sure. Maybe outright.
I don't think 12-6 will outright. I do think 13-5 could flirt with,
because like I would guess everyone, there's 4 teams at 6-3. If I had to guess, I think best case Texas is gonna be at what, 8-3 at the end of Monday night.
Yeah,
probably.
I would say
I bet they'll be dogs in both games. Maybe not. Yeah. Maybe they'll be favored in Manhattan, but
I can find that for you right now.
Three, and then they have to play.
Dude, their schedule
they have
is
to play
brutal.
At Baylor, I think.
Everyone's schedule's brutal.
Yeah, but like Texas still has to go to K-State, to KU. KU comes to town. They got to go to Baylor. They got to go to TCU. Like, we've at least already knocked off.
Right, but like run down ours. Like I think we overvalued Lubbock and Morgantown a little bit because of history and how big those wins normally are.
For sure.
But like
for sure.
We still gotta go to Texas, to TCU, to Hilton, both Oklahoma schools, which seemed always, at least Oklahoma State always gives us trouble. Like we've said it all year. There's not one game you look at except for maybe Texas Tech at home that you're going into it knowing that you're probably gonna win pretty controllably. I guess last night we probably
Texas's
all had that feeling.
Two conference lot. They lost to K-State, and then what am I missing? Oh, they lost to Iowa State. Texas, I feel like we all kind of like I will admit I wrote them off when Beard got fired. Like I just felt like, okay, they're not winning the league with an interim coach, but they are still extremely talented. And like B-Turn said, a nightmare matchup for us and a matchup that has given us problems for what feels like 3 straight years now. They're just always so athletic and long. And I'm never looking forward to playing Texas. So I don't know. I guess that brings me to my next question. Like if we're going to, and we should probably wrap this up soon, but like if we're going to lose 2 more games in conference play to go to 13-5, which I think is all of our goal, what's the route to that? Like who can we afford to lose to? At Texas?
I think
and...
we lose at Texas and at TCU, I would guess. I mean, you can't say we're obviously going to play better, but a team that beat you by 23 at home. I don't know I don't know where Mike Miles is injury wise. I know he had to sit out
Lampton's
Tuesday night
too, isn't he?
Or last night.
Yeah. But I think Miles will be fine.
Yeah,
but
that game's still
3 weeks. I will say
away.
This about the TCU game. It feels like classic Bill Self revenge.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Feels like
not
just a vintage
too.
Road game where we go in and like Jalen or somebody had like Devontae at Texas Tech in 2018 or like they won at Allen Fieldhouse early in that year, didn't they? So we just feel like we always get last laugh in a lot of these moments, which Texas swept us a few years ago. So not always, but
also, do we. If you guys had to predict, do we win both games at the Oklahoma schools?
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't see a scenario we go better than 12-6. And that's not a bad thing. It's not like a shot, but Jesus, like you mentioned the 5-game stretch. I think 3-2 would be somewhat successful. Like Ames at Ames is maybe the second most difficult game we're going to get this year.
I've gotten way too confident with that Ames. It just feels like a week.
That's the thing.
I feel good about
it. So 12-6, we finish with 7 losses, maybe win the Big 12 tournament and share the Big 12. Do we get a 1?
That's a 1 seed.
12-6 with one non-con loss to Tennessee and winning the Big 12 tournament, we'd get a 1 seed, right, AB? Yeah.
Now, I don't know if it'd be in Kansas City, and then we could have the conversation. I'd rather have the 2 in the Midwest. Yeah. But now, I don't know how that all works, but I would think Purdue and Houston would probably have the leg up on us to get Kansas City in that case. But I don't know. That's a long ways. There's a lot of basketball left, but I don't know. I just don't really go into any game other than a handful.
I can't believe it's already February, boys.
I had that feeling last night. We're like over 2/3 of the way through the regular season.
Yeah, this conference is nuts because like
West Virginia's 20th overall team on KenPom.
Yeah. Moved up to 19.
Yeah. After losing.
It's just insane.
It's
just
insane. We're at the bottom of the league.
I can't like, it was weird playing, and I know Kentucky's down, but like the way the Big 12 pretty much just dominated the SEC and just the way things just felt easier against Kentucky. Offense flowed better. It was just wild that playing the SEC was like a nice little break, a nice little treat in the middle of conference play to go play little old Kentucky to get ourselves back on track. Like the Big 12 is crazy and it's going to be. Yes, AB.
I just want you to read your tweet from Saturday night about Self and Calipari.
Oh, yeah, let me go.
I think that needs to hit people's eardrums because that was one of the most insane things I've ever read in my life.
It's so funny, dude. Like, all right, this is great radio. But all right, so here we go. When John Calipari got hired at Kentucky, so that was what, 2009, 2010 season, they held an 18-game lead on KU in the all-time wins category, which for two programs like KU and Kentucky, that's a big lead. Teams that are going to win a lot of games, they're going to be close. Since then, John Calipari has been to 4 Final Fours. He won a Natty. He coached – I didn't even tweet this part. He coached a 37-win team.
Mm-hmm.
He won 78% of his games. Yet, in that time, Kansas has gone from 18 wins behind to 7 wins ahead. Like, John Calipari has had a Hall of Fame career at Kentucky and has lost 25 games in the all-time wins race against Bill Self. And that's not John Calipari's fault. That's Bill Self being absolutely absurd, the most consistent coach, I think, maybe like I'm getting out of control, but like is Bill Self consistency-wise maybe one of the best of all time, like top 3 of all time. I'm not kidding. I think
he's won everywhere.
Like, just consistency. Doesn't mean go win natties, but just consistently he's good every year. Like, he doesn't have a down year like you see with even Roy had them.
Just reading the seat lines every year at KU.
Yeah.
Bluebloods are missing the tournament every once in a while.
I thought you were going way more drastic with that. I thought you were going to say, like, in all of sports, which I think I might have agreed with, too. But, like, honestly. Yeah.
He just is crazy. Like, I saw, like, Kentucky fans responding to that tweet, like, being like, yeah, Calipari's got to go. Like, that wasn't even a shot at John Calipari. Like I said, 4 Final Fours, a national title, 78% of your wins. If he only coached at Kentucky and put up those numbers, he would be a Hall of Famer. And it's managed to not be even close to good enough to maintain the lead against KU. So it just kind of goes into what I've also said. Like, I think this 2003 to 2023 maybe, or even 2027, however you want, 2028, call it 25 years of Kansas basketball, I truly don't think we will ever top what we will see from 03 to say Bill Self leaves in 2028. It may be the greatest KU basketball is ever.
It would have
in the
to
history.
Be.
Like,
I mean, it's the
especially
only,
especially if he gets another title
outside of the 1920s ones. I mean, it's the only 25-year stretch they got 2 titles, right?
Yeah,
unless I'm just true, not right. Mathing right. Like,
yeah.
And then they struggled a little bit. I mean, I don't know how much. I'm not going to act like I'm a 1960s KU basketball historian right now, but like, I don't think they were as elite every single year. They'd go to a Final Four every few years, every 5, you know, whatever. But
just so nobody makes fun of us, from 1988 to 2008, that's 20 years, and we won two titles. So you can kind of just pick your 25-year stretch.
Sure.
Sure.
I see what you're saying. So I don't know. That was a random – my brain started flying into places as we were bringing up that Calipari tweet. But it was just – it's crazy. And to think of where we are at right now, just confidence level in our coach, our program – and to think where Kentucky is, feels good. It feels really good. I can't imagine wanting Bill Self fired, and those people truly want Calipari fired. So it's good.
It's good.
All right. Anything else, boys?
Oh, just basketball hoops.
Basketball hoops. I'm going to start every show with that now. Welcome back. Time to talk basketball.
Big 12 is a monster. We got two big ones coming up, boys. In Ames Saturday, we win that game. Everyone's feeling it. Monday night against another top 10 team in Texas or whatever they're ranked now. It feels like the whole Big 12 is ranked, but that Fieldhouse is going to be juiced Monday night regardless, win or lose in Ames. But, man, if we could win these next two, I'm feeling elite, 8-3 in the league.
I mean,
we're going to.
Three different games against top 15 teams in a six-day span, seven-day span?
Yeah.
What a joke. Yeah. And I feel like we're just coming off a stretch that we were talking like, holy shit, this is a crazy stretch.
Yeah, I know. It's like I read that five-game stretch and see OU and Oklahoma State on it. I'm like, oh, thank God, but they're road games.
Nice little break. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's when we're talking about breaks in the schedule being road games at Kentucky and at bubble teams in conference, one of which your head coach, Oklahoma State, thinks they royally fucked him over. Or he royally fucked them over, sorry. Like, it's just insane. One last thing. I don't want to get super deep into it. Just everyone chill out with your ESPN Plus complaints. Like, it's not that big of a deal. It's $5 a month, and you get Jay Billis still. So
that was nice. They did – I didn't watch at home, I was happy for the home viewers
Great pass. Look at that pass.
All right. That is it for the show. Shout out Jay Billis. Shout out the Hawks. Big week ahead. And we'll be back next week to recap it. That's it. Rock chalk.
Thanks for listening to KC Sports Network. Don't forget to hit that follow button and leave us a review if you like what you heard and think others would as well. You can find all six of our channels at KCSN, covering the Chiefs, the Royals, Sporting KC, and the KC Current, plus KU, K-State, or Mizzou by searching KCSN wherever you listen to podcasts. We're also on YouTube. Entertain, educate, inform. KC Sports Network.